This is The Waves.
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 Welcome to The Waves, Slate's podcast about gender, feminism, and today at least, aging alongside your favorite pop stars. Every episode, you get a new pair of feminists to talk about the thing we can't get off our minds. And today you've got me, Asha Saluja, managing producer of Slate Podcasts.
And me, Shannon Paulus, Slate's senior editor, mostly covering science and health.
So, the thing we can't get off our minds this week is that it's a huge week in pop music. Last Friday, pop icon and near-constant figure of public fascination Taylor Swift marked the re-release of her 2012 album Red with a short film, a slew of late-night interviews, and an SNL appearance. And this coming weekend, beloved but reclusive megastar Adele gears up for the release of her next album, 30, after a two-hour primetime special that featured an intimate concert and an interview with Oprah. I am a huge music fan and devoted follower of all of the pop girlies, so I'm really excited to talk to you, Shannon, about both of these album cycles, and in particular, how they speak to one decidedly feminist concern, the way we react to prominent women aging in the public eye. Shannon, why did you want to talk about this?
Asha, I spend maybe 90% of my life when I have headphones in listening to Taylor Swift. I was a big fan of Red when it came out. Taylor was 22. I was 22. And getting to revisit Red alongside Taylor is just a magical experience in we're happy, free, confused in all the best ways. That has been my vibe all weekend. I've also been thinking a lot about what it means to observe pop stars and their public images. I recently wrote about Adele's weight loss and how I feel about that and how I feel weird about having feelings about that. So I'm really excited to dive into pop stars and new music and what it means to be a woman in the spotlight.
I feel you on all of those things. I'm so excited too. And we should mention that we're right about the same age. So these pop stars and the particular ages that they are really ripe for our specific projections. So I'm right there with you. Stay tuned, and we're going to deep dive into what that's been like for us as women, feminists, and pop fans to get older with these women and witness their careers over time. Hello, Waves listener. We hope that you're enjoying the show. And if you are, be sure to come back every Thursday for a new episode. To make it easy, you can subscribe to our feed. And while you're there, check out some other episodes too, like last week's conversation, which was really, really great about using the words pregnant person versus pregnant women.
When it comes to weight loss, no two people are the same. That's why Noom builds personalized plans based on your unique psychology and biology. Take Brittany. After years of unsustainable diets, Noom helped her lose 20 pounds and keep it off.
I was definitely in a yo-yo cycle for years of just losing weight, gaining weight, and it was exhausting.
And Stephanie. She's a former D1 athlete who knew she couldn't out-train her diet, and she lost 38 pounds.
My relationship to food before Noom was never consistent.
And Evan, he can't stand salads, but he still lost 50 pounds with Noom.
I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. Even through the pickiness, Noom taught me that building better habits builds a healthier lifestyle. I'm not doing this to get to a number. I'm doing this to feel better.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom users compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Taylor Swift is currently on a press tour for the re-release of her 2012 album Red. This is part of a big project to re-record and release the entirety of her catalog prior to the year 2018 so that she owns the masters to her songs in addition to owning the songwriting credits. We can get into what I think about this entire undertaking, which is turning out to be quite a big sort of like mid-career milestone for Taylor Swift. But first, Shannon, let's get into how this particular release speaks to the current career moment Taylor finds herself in. and how her age and gender have informed it. Shannon, I know you mentioned that Red is a particularly meaningful Taylor album to you. Do you want to talk about why?
Yeah, so the theme of Red is being 22 years old, and I was 22 when Red came out, so that just felt magical. This pop star who sings about emotions in very deep and descriptive ways was my age and was in some ways going through a lot of the stuff that I was going through. One of the songs that resonated with me most on Red, particularly on the original, was We Are Never Ever Getting Back Together. And it just kind of captures that feeling of being in college and kind of surveying everyone in your life about your dating moves and kind of gathering intel about your like love interest dating moves and strategizing and kind of in a lot of ways doing anything except having a conversation directly with them about your needs and then going and making this big declarative statement like we're never ever getting back together was very relatable. And in particular, the bridge of the song where she's talking and she says,
I mean, this is exhausting, you know? Like, we're never getting back together. Like, ever.
No! I think that I've quoted that in therapy at least once. Just to, it really captured emotionally what was going on in my dating life. And I listened to that, like, very carefully on the re-release. And it just didn't seem the same as on the original. I think you have to be in that kind of 22 headspace to get out that little spoken word part with all of that emphasis. For me, the song that resonated the most this time around was All Too Well, the 10-minute version. She just seemed much more together than I did. And I know people say, oh, well, she dated a ton of guys and she's always been dramatic. And like, I just didn't buy that. Like, she seemed like she was really in love and had this love that was like deeper and more valid than my kind of needy, like crummy love that wasn't reciprocated. And in the new version, it's just like the new verses that are slotted into the 10-minute version reveal this entire backstory to me that does align with my experience. And I think does align a lot with the experience of being 22 and in kind of a shitty relationship where you're not really getting what you need out of it.
I think that these lyrics make the song all the more relatable. And I think in some ways they help me at least unpack the sort of internalized misogyny I've maybe had about the topics of, you know, Taylor's music over the years. She's definitely lived most of her 20s in the shadow of this early press narrative that was created around her as like a serial dater, as someone who is writing entire albums about a guy she's dated for a few months, sort of like a dating dilettante, but also like a super dramatic, scorned woman. And all of these things were both really gendered in a way that I see as sexist, but also that I was really susceptible to as someone who sort of lived throughout my 20s as like, you know, someone who did not wish to be defined by the men in my life. But these details helped me unpack the misogyny that I felt toward her and sort of the like judgment that I held toward her for writing long songs about guys that she maybe saw for a few months, because our society is in a different place right now. We're taking women's pain more seriously. We're like,
yes, like she's seen as a serial dater, and she's like a lot of the chatter, which I've frankly not engaged with because I don't want to. I want my feelings about this album to stay pure. One thing I've always appreciated about Taylor is the way that she kind of blows up these really small feelings and lends them like real gravity. Some of her songs are about someone who she saw once, briefly. And my counter to like, well, isn't that ridiculous? Is it's like, well, it's not really about the guy. It's about something you're processing within yourself and trying to find your place in the world, exploring those feelings of like what you need and what you want and who you want to become through people you see who you think are hot, or people you have these like little special dancing around in the refrigerator light moments with. It is really worthwhile. And men do this, by the way, too. The song Hey There, Delilah, that was really popular when we were in high school, was about some girl that the singer met at a party briefly.
I mean, from the scarf to like the refrigerator light to all of the details in this song, I'm now in a headspace where I think it's like really beautiful and powerful that she's able to draw sort of masterpieces out of small emotions and small experiences. You know, I have some like mixed feelings and some critical thoughts about a major pop star hitting her 30s and spending a bunch of time as a pit stop, sort of like looking back to her even younger days. She's like doubling the amount of material that was originally released. So I can't hold it against her that she's not still digging into her creative well and like making new things happen. But it does disappoint me on one level as a woman who's kind of like about to turn 31, who's staring down sort of like the next decade of my life, that the pop star who's my age, the one that I've aged through my teens and 20s with, is stopping at this juncture to spend all of this time in a more youthful place and like in a nostalgic place for a younger age. And I think the reason I feel so strongly about this is that I right now am also finding myself like oddly nostalgic for this era of my life. I kind of wonder a little bit, like, is this because we don't necessarily have romanticized narratives of what it's like to be 32 compared to what it's like to be 22. I kind of wonder like whether she and I are both susceptible to like a sort of societal infatuation with youth. But one thing I also wanted to bring up is that she's not unself-aware about this. And in fact, she was thinking about it long before it occurred to me, having sort of aged in the spotlight, becoming a famous teenager, and basically feeling like she was potentially going to be old news by the time she was writing this album, Red. It was her fourth album. And one of the new From the Vault songs that she released as a duet with Phoebe Bridgers is called Nothing New. And some of the lyrics speak to this fear and concern of mine super directly.
I know someday I'm gonna meet her. It's a fever dream. The kind of radiance you only have at 17. She'll know the way and then she'll say she got the laugh from me. I'll say I'm happy for her, then I'll cry myself to sleep. Oh,
I mean, that is just like gutting.
I listen to this album and I think, thank God I'm not 22 anymore.
So we've talked quite a bit now about this re-release project. And another component of sort of like the conversation around it that's been rubbing me the wrong way is like that she kind of talks about it as a feminist pursuit. Taylor Swift is one of the richest women in America. While I think it's great for her on a personal level to like regain creative control of the stuff that she's made in the past and that was kind of like exploitatively, to be fair, wrested from her control very early on when she was a teenager, I don't know that I necessarily see it as like a win for women that she's doing this project on a business level. Shannon, I'm really curious, what do you think?
I have to say, I like mostly don't give a shit, but in terms of a means to an end and us getting this new stuff, I support it. I think that like Taylor's whole like beef with people, part of her persona is one that I kind of try to ignore because it is embarrassing. Same with the part of her that released a keychain that says, fuck the patriarchy with the U starred out after people were going insane over the lyric. Like, why star out the U?
Another thing about this album cycle is that part of the motivation for it, to be sure, was like business oriented. I mean, she's doing this entire re-release project to sort of best a business rival. And it's going really well, like tons of critical acclaim. But when we look at it as a business move, it's hard to not wonder, like, in a music industry that is known to sort of discard women once they expire at the ripe old age of 35, it's a little disappointing that sort of the re-release project has like been just so lucrative and been viewed as such a savvy, super savvy business move. Again, you can't hold this against her because she's doing incredible things when she is living in the present, like Folklore and Evermore, some of her best work, if not, you know, potentially her overall best work. I think she's more creatively fruitful than ever. Yeah, so it just leaves me with mixed feelings about why, you know, we're not allowing her to, like, move straightforwardly into her 30s.
It sort of reminds me of the fact that, you know, movies these days are all, like, sequels. You know, we have Fast and Furious, like, part 100. It feels like, in a way, everybody's just sort of looking at old IP and saying, what can we do with this?
Yeah, man, dust off that old IP. It's totally a trend that's taking hold of, like, the music industry, too, with studios getting into TikTok and saying, like, which songs can we make viral? So, yeah, it seems like she's totally not above this, like, music industry strategizing.
What I really love about the re-release project is just getting the fresh material, the From the Vault material. And this re-release of Red was such a trove of that. I feel like I got a little mini album from Taylor.
Yeah, she's definitely bringing it with the new material. And ultimately, it's really inspiring to listen to the re-recordings because her voice sounds so much more mature and kind of overtly better, in my opinion. Like, she's really grown as a singer since the original recordings. As much as I have, like, mixed and critical feelings about this retrospective, I appreciate that she's revisiting this era with, like, as you say, wiser eyes.
One thing I refuse to engage with is watching the All Too Well film. I will not watch the All Too Well film.
Oh, my God. I loved it. I think it actually really hammered this home for me in a way that I was like, oh, man, I really felt this way. Like, I'm watching this happen. This whole scene has happened to me. So, yeah, no pressure, but I don't not recommend it.
I think I'm going to stick to sitting around and pretending the entire song is literally about me. And I'm not going to do anything that would puncture that.
Perfect. Okay, so on that note, we have another pop star whose life we're projecting ourselves into right now, and that is Adele. We're going to take a break here, and we're going to get into a bunch of that right after the break. But if you want to hear more from Shannon and me about another topic, check out our Waves Plus segment, Is This Feminist?, where today we're going to be debating whether pop stars not dancing in music videos is feminist. Stay tuned for that.
If you're not yet a Slate Plus member, you should join now. Members get bonus content like our amazing segment, but also on shows like Slow Burn, Slate Money, Culture Gab Fest, and more. It's only $1 for the first month. To sign up, go to slate.com/thewavesplus.
Hi, I'm Josh Levine. My podcast, The Queen, tells the story of Linda Taylor. She was a con artist, a kidnapper, and maybe even a murderer. She was also given the title The Welfare Queen, and her story was used by Ronald Reagan to justify slashing aid to the poor. Now, it's time to hear her real story. Over the course of 4 episodes, you'll find out what was done to Linda Taylor, what she did to others, and what was done in her name.
The great lesson of this, for me, is that people will come to their own conclusions based on what their prejudices are.
Subscribe to The Queen on Apple Podcasts or wherever you're listening right now.
Okay, so we're back. And we're going to dive into the career arc of Adele, who, by contrast to Taylor Swift's current press moment, has embarked on one of her own that is distinctly marking her next decade of life with her album 30, which comes out this Friday. In the music video for the first single on the album, Easy on Me, Adele is truly marking the passing of time in the first shots of the video for her most recent big single, a few years back, Hello. She's seen entering and settling into a dusty old house. In the opening shots for this new video, she is shown leaving that same house, which is lived in and no longer dusty. having a breezy phone conversation. So she's signaling, time has passed, I've weathered a storm, and I'm okay. And in her primetime special, which aired this past Sunday night, she talked to Oprah about a lot of the things that precipitated this new era. Her divorce, her raising her son Angelo as a single parent, cutting out alcohol for a while, and one big change, Shannon, that you wrote about recently in Slate. Should we dive right into it?
Let's dive in. So Adele is skinny now compared to the way she looked before. She's been skinny for a while. Last spring, she announced her skinniness to the world in an Instagram post that quickly went viral and was dissected on all manner of news sites and no doubt comment sections and places where trolls hang out. And with this current cycle, we got skinny Adele in a music video. We have skinny Adele doing press. This has made me really bummed out. So many of our pop stars are really, really super skinny. That's almost a job requirement, is being super skinny. So to have one of the ones who is not skinny become skinny felt to me like a loss. And I want to be really clear here that I'm talking about the image of Adele and not Adele the person, because Adele the person can do whatever she wants with her body. It's none of my business. But Adele professionally is a celebrity image that's crafted for music videos, for magazines. You can't lose weight as a megastar and not have the thought of, like, how is this affecting my public image? How is this strengthening it going into that journey?
Yeah, I think there's some really interesting stuff in the Oprah interview about this, where she's kind of like, listen, I've always been objectified for my body. She's kind of like, my body has never not figured in to how I've been perceived as a star. And so right now is no different. And it's like, yeah, certain people saw themselves in me before and certain people see themselves in me now. And she said she sort of does feel bad that the people who used to see themselves in her might feel disappointed, but she, you know, can't live her life around that.
My body has been objectified my entire career. Mm. I'm either too big, I'm either too small, like, you know, I'm either hot or I'm either not, like, whatever. I never looked up to anyone because of their body. You know, I never admired anyone because they had the same hair color as me or the same style as me or, you know, whatever. So,
or were the same weight as you?
Never. Never, ever, ever.
And when you were heavier, you were fine.
I was body positive then and I'm body positive now. But it's not my job to validate how people feel about their bodies. Ooh. And I feel bad that, you know, it's made anyone feel horrible about themselves. But that's not my job. And I'm trying to sort my own life out. You know, I can't add another worry and another thing to try and nail. I can't.
And I think that is important, that Adele, the human being that sits inside of this, like, big cloud of celebrity image, which is the part that we see, Adele, the human being, doesn't owe anyone anything in terms of, like, being a point of representation of, like, a different size in the music industry. The people who are responsible for that are the people behind the scenes who are selecting who gets to be a recording artist and a pop star and who is going to have their name listed in the liner notes of an album for having written the song and who gets to be on magazines and in what shape and in what presentation. And I tried to be really clear about this in my piece. When we're talking about Adele, or even when we're talking about Taylor Swift and making this calculated decision to re-record her albums, we're not really talking about one human woman here. We're talking about an entire business structure around that person and then an entire industry around that one person's business structure. So when I say that I'm bummed that Adele lost weight, that's the thought and the feeling that I'm having. But what's under that is I'm bummed that our pop stars are really fucking conventionally hot in a very specific way. And when you lose someone that's, like, not conventionally attractive on one very narrow axis, it feels like a backslide because the range of what people look like is so, so narrow. That's what I'm bummed about. That's what I, in fact, am very angry about.
I also think it's really interesting that Adele's sort of like opened up about this in, you know, a pretty carefully calculated but still vulnerable way, in a way that like sort of mimics a template that these other sort of like post-20s pop stars have followed too. Like, it almost feels like it's part of the template now that a pop star who, you know, hits 29 is going to have to open up to the public about their struggle with their body and like whether they're already super thin and conventionally attractive or whether, you know, they're on the other side of that. It's just part of the script now. A big part of sort of like Taylor Swift's public image in her last few years has been opening up about basically healing from an eating disorder or at least some disordered eating. And this reminds me, too, of another star who kind of serves as the template for these two women in terms of just their ages, what it's like to be one of the most famous women in music over the age of 30, and that's Beyoncé. Beyoncé sort of marked her aging out of her 20s with a really similar confessional moment where she sort of talked about the struggles with her body image that she'd had in the past, the diets that she followed to kind of like gear up toward her biggest moments, and the pressure that she still feels as even as a woman in her 30s to sort of, as they say, eat clean and follow a specific diet.
Good morning. It's 5 a.m. and this is day one of rehearsals for Coachella. Every woman's nightmare. This is my weight, 175. Long way to go. Let's get it.
Beyoncé is famously a very private person, and the fact that one of the few intimacies we get of her life that, you know, doesn't come through her music, because her music is, of course, very intimate, but one of the, like, inside looks we have at her life over the past few years is, like, is her standing on a scale. That's disturbing to me.
Yeah, and you can't begrudge any of these individual women for sort of living through the fat phobia and body stigma that we are all susceptible to. And I'm sure that it really helps some people for them to come out and talk about, you know, what they go through to maintain the bodies that they have and, you know, what struggle and strife it causes them to have to feel the pressure to do that. But at the same time, like, it would be so liberating to just have a format or a template for a woman who's aging into her 30s, 40s, and beyond without making her body the centerpiece of the conversation.
It does feel like a small piece of what you have to offer if you are a very famous woman is the, like, story of how you came to terms with your body or how you made your body smaller or how you changed your body. Like, that is a newsworthy fact about yourself. And that's what's disturbing. It's not, again, right, I don't begrudge anyone for taking the cards that they've been dealt and using them like this.
Yeah. Adele is one of those pop stars that is sort of on a different trajectory than I, at least me personally, and probably a lot of the millennials that are her contemporaries. So this whole album cycle is tied to a new era for her personal, mental, physical, spiritual growth. And she's been very careful to paint it as such. But one thing I think is really interesting about how that's being reflected in her career is that at least from her lead single on this new album, all of that growth is kind of sounding the same. Like, Adele's, you know, Easy on Me could have easily been on 25. And to be fair, we have not heard the whole album yet. Like Taylor, she is sort of like showing a lot of growth as a vocalist and a singer. It turns out that she's actually had vocal cord surgery, leading to a really clear and beautiful voice. But in terms of, like, how the music is arriving with us, like, Shannon, would you agree that she's not necessarily showing as much growth, dare I say?
You know what you're going to get with an Adele song. It's an Adele song. It's wonderful. It's well sung and it's heartfelt and it's an Adele song. One thing that I do want to push back on, you mentioned that Adele has really focused on how her weight loss is part of this mental shift and being healthier and feeling better about herself. I hate it when people talk about weight loss like that because it implies that, oh, if you get healthy and if you're in a better headspace, you'll lose weight. When I actually think a lot of times you can get healthy and be in a better headspace and stay the same weight or even gain weight.
Her talking about it that way certainly does perpetuate a stereotype that we're probably better off without right now.
I also think that Adele's music has clearly stayed a lot more steady than Taylor's, but Adele also stays out of the spotlight to a much, much bigger extent than Taylor. She doesn't gossip as much. She doesn't leave Easter eggs in her songs for people to figure out her past lovers and who she was photographed with. And I think that bolsters the sense of maturity that her songs have. The older I get, the more I realize that everybody deals with the same petty relationship shit that everybody else does to a certain extent. And maturity isn't not having that petty stuff happen. Maturity is kind of keeping it under wraps sometimes.
It is sort of the surefire sign of a pop star coming into their own as they age into new decades. It's like deciding what you are or are not going to contribute to the conversation about you. So, like, Adele is a little more following the Beyoncé script. You know, Beyoncé, as she grew older, became just super, super careful about what press she was going to do, in what capacities you were going to be allowed to see her existing. Adele's doing a little bit of the same, you know. She went off the radar for 5-6 years, and now she's coming back in Oprah fashion. So it's obviously a pretty carefully calculated maneuver. Taylor Swift is handling things a little bit differently. She's allowing herself to be viewed and accessed to a bit of a greater extent. But she's, like, controlling more of the narrative in a very personal way. Obviously, she's doing this re-record thing. She's directing the music videos. She is, like, partnering on every single detail of the business venture. It's these three different pop stars aging into a sense of control that works for them.
Before we head out, we want to give some recommendations. Asha, what are you loving right now?
I have two recommendations. They're both things that I think are going to jolt my senses as we head into the winter doldrums of COVID year two. The first one is a brand of hand sanitizer. It's called Jao Refresher, J-A-O. And, you know, if you're like me and sometimes you're out in public transport or other public settings, you feel like you need to get the germs off your hands real quick when you don't have access to a sink. But the smell of regular hand sanitizer brings you a deep sensory recall to the beginning of COVID. This will jolt you out of that. It smells amazing somehow, despite having the recommended amount of alcohol to actually clean your hands per the CDC. So that's my one recommendation. My other recommendation is singing in the shower. I recommend it. It's good for you. Just try it.
My recommendation is getting a latte and going for a walk with a latte. I have been on a latte streak at work recently where every afternoon or many afternoons, I go and buy a latte or a cappuccino from this fancy little coffee truck in our office complex. And I know that the whole financial recommendation that you shouldn't buy coffee out and, like, certainly not lattes has been debunked many times. but I feel particularly satisfied when I have a near daily latte and I think, I can afford this. It's not as expensive as has been ingrained into each of us. It's a nice, small luxury.
Look at us, millennials through and through. That's our show this week. The Waves is produced by Shayna Roth.
Susan Matthews is our editorial director, with June Thomas providing oversight and moral support.
If you like the show, be sure to subscribe, rate, and review wherever you get your podcasts. And please consider supporting the show by joining Slate Plus. Members get benefits like zero ads on any Slate podcast and unlimited reading on the Slate site. No paywall. It's only $1 for the first month. To learn more, go to slate.com/thewavesplus.
We'd also love to hear from you. Email us at thewaves@slate.com.
The Waves will be back next week. Different hosts, different topic, same time and place.
Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.